You're listening to Life in Our Skin, a podcast created for women in the middle. Here, we discuss unique perspectives of our American experience living between the white and black communities. I'm Lisa Harris.
And I'm Anahita Champion. Join us as we share life in our skin, raw and unedited.
Well, welcome back. We are here, Lisa, you and me, and a secret friend that we're going to chat with. But first and first, how's my gal pal doing, Lisa?
Oh, I'm doing good. I'm doing really good. We are hanging in there. We're having a good morning, afternoon. I don't even know what day it is, what time it is.
Whatever day people listen to this, this is when it is.
That's right.
So our last interview was really fun, and the interview before that was amazing, and we're getting some really good feedback from people about the conversations that are slightly transitioning. And so I'm going to let you introduce our guest today, and then we're going to hear from her, but I'm really jazzed about the convo today.
Oh, I'm always super excited, and I'm laughing right now because we can actually see this beautiful woman. But I'm super, super excited to introduce Paya. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for having me. It's Friday today, so.
Yes, we're recording this on a Friday, which is going to be a totally different jazz level in our voices than if we recorded this on a Monday afternoon.
That's right. Oh my gosh. It's so great to finally be able to have a conversation with you and really get to learn more about you. So I would love to just jump off the way we always do, which is learning about little girl selves. And so I would just love to hear from you about your little girl self. Who was she? What did she like? What were her interests? You know, just paint a picture for us of what it was like to be you, maybe your surroundings, your family. Just really start off with that space in your life.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I finally found my photo book from years and years ago, and I was just looking through my pictures, and I was sending my pictures to my 13-year-old niece and just like, hey, this is me at this time, this is me at this age. And I found a picture of my sister and I was probably around 4 or 5 years old, and I was all dressed in monk clothes with this hat, my favorite hat. It's a very decorative hat. And I told my niece, I'm like, yeah, I would always fantasize that I was, God, what's that show? My Little Pony.
Oh,
my Little Pony, like in the late 80s. And I'm like, that's what I wanted to be, was just My Little Pony with the rainbows, the butterflies, the clouds. And I think I just had a really big imagination. So, and I said, I remember I love that hat. And I would remember begging my mom to bring down the suitcase where all of her nice clothes are and be like, please, please, I just want to wear that hat. And she would be like, no, no, no. And then she finally relented, and I would wear it, you know, model it and be like, okay, I'm done. And then she'd be like, you didn't even want to play with it. And it was like, you know, 5, 10 minutes, and I was done with it. But it's funny because now my mom would remind me that I used to love to wear monk clothes. And now she's like, no, you don't even care for it. I'm like, no, I don't.
Oh, that's really interesting.
Hiya, where were you born?
I was actually born in La Crosse, Wisconsin. Okay. So my siblings and I had this conversation. We thought we were first generation. Like, no, we're second generation because we were born here. I'm like, no, we got to be first generation with all the trauma and, you know, all the stuff we went through. We got to be first generation. But no, I guess I just learned that if you're born here, you're second generation. Mm-hmm. And so I'm second generation. I grew up in La Crosse, and there's 8 of us. I have 6 brothers. I have 1 older sister. Wow. And I am the first one born in La Crosse. Out of the 3 of us, the youngest 3, I'm the first one born in La Crosse in the 80s. And then the other three were born down south in Dallas and Oklahoma. And then the two oldest one were from Laos. So,
okay. So some of your siblings were born outside of the country then. Okay.
Yes.
Wow. So when did your parents immigrate to the US? And it sounds like they kind of went all over the place.
They did, yeah. So my parents were refugees escaping the Vietnam War in 1979. And I believe my mom was pregnant with my third oldest brother at this point. And she had him in Dallas. And then after that, they moved to Oklahoma and then had my sister and then my other brother. And then around, 1984. Three, I gave my age away. 1983, they moved to Wisconsin with a lot of my other relatives. They all came up here, and so that's how we ended up here. So yeah, La Crosse is a small city, about 50,000 people, not a lot of diversity. I think we were probably the first diverse group to settle in that city.
Yeah.
So kind of really shake things up.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I have just become even more and more familiar with the Hmong community living here in the Twin Cities, because there's so many Hmong people here, and there's a lot of Hmong women actually in the network that I have and Anahita's network as well. Do you know more history about why Hmong families were coming specifically to that area, because there's La Crosse, Eau Claire area. Mm-hmm. I feel like there's a lot of Hmong families outside of like the Minneapolis Twin Cities.
Yeah, you know, so we come from a very warm tropical country, and then we would choose the coldest places in the U.S. Right? that doesn't make sense. That really doesn't make sense. And I did ask my mom, why did you guys come up here? And there was a lot more support for education. And this was in the 80s. So better welfare programs too.
Oh, sure.
And so a lot of us and better resources to help immigration. So there were a lot of programs supporting new refugees and immigrants. And a lot of this was up here in the Midwest. So that's why we came up here.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So,
So I am curious, because as a Hmong woman born in Wisconsin, where do you live today?
I actually live up here in the Twin Cities.
Okay, so you're in Minnesota now. Mm-hmm. Growing up with seven other siblings, I want to talk about what identity and the word identity means to you, especially how growing up in a household that each, you know, all the different siblings probably have different experiences, born in different states in Laos. But what does that word identity mean to you, and what kind of a relationship do you have with the word identity?
You know, that's a great question. And so even though I was born here, like a lot of children of immigrants, our parents' generation really stuck onto their identity. And our story is like we were displaced, so we didn't have a choice if we wanted to survive. And so a lot of them probably didn't get to grieve because everything happened pretty quick with the war and everything. And so being a daughter, being the only daughter, being the second daughter out of six brothers, and growing up pretty traditional with my parents back then, being a girl meant like you obey, you follow rules, you were groomed young to be a future wife, be a daughter-in-law, be a mother. And so a lot of that was drilled into us. And yet somehow I felt like I was born a rebel. And so a lot of that, I was just like, no. I remember my mother tried, she tried so hard to try to make me learn how to sew, and I just, for the life of me, I could not cross stitch. And I
Wasn't
still can't,
happening.
yeah, it was not happening. And I was just like, that's not my thing. It's not my thing to sew. And that was the thing. Like back in the 80s and 90s, they really tried to groom us to be these daughters for to when you left the house, when you got married, and about the image of who your parents were, and they said, yes, they raised good kids, and now they come into our families, and they are, good daughter-in-laws, good son-in-laws, good mothers. And so I tried. I just didn't have it in me to be the future daughter-in-law that my mother hoped that I would be.
So, what did you experience in your lifetime? I'll let you kind of choose if there's any story or example that stands out to you where maybe you tried to rebel against or within the Hmong identity. Like, what did that I what was your identity? How did you identify? How do you identify?
I identify as Hmong, and yet as I've gotten older, I just identify as myself now, as me, the person. And I remember vividly at the age of 10, my mother wanted me to do a certain chore. And when you're 10, you get kind of petty. You're like, why me? Why me? Why am I always doing everything? Why don't you ask them? And I had the attitude at 10, and I remember my mom asked me, I think to set the table, and I'm like, why are you asking me again? And I waited for her answer. I wanted her to say, because, and I think I pointed out, why don't you ask like one of my brothers?
Right.
And I thought she was going to say, well, they're doing something else, or I'm going to ask them later. And the only answer she to give me was because you're a girl. And I was so livid at 10, and I just yelled at her and said, I'm never gonna be a slave. And the disappointment in her face was just saying that I'm never gonna be a slave, because to me it felt like I was a girl, that was my role, and you can give me any other answer than being a girl. And for me, it was pushing back and say, oh no, you're not gonna, if that's the only reason you can give me, no, that's not a good justification. And so I think ever since then, I just really question why is it me as a girl who has to take on all these roles and be tired, be tired and be exhausted. And I saw a lot of our women in my family, in our culture, be exhausted, and I just didn't want that for myself. And I'm like, if that's what it means, I don't want to be an exhausted wife, daughter-in-law, mother, and I'm gonna have a different life. And so that's when I started rebelling and say, I'm gonna have the life I want and not what you guys chose for me.
Oh, I love that. It's such a hard place to come to, especially I think for immigrant children, is like how do you balance that feeling of being your own person, especially when you're going against like these ideas, cultural ideals of what it means to be a girl or a daughter. And yeah, I think it's very courageous, but it is something that a lot of immigrant children do have to navigate. And so I think this conversation, there's so many people out there that especially 70s, 80s kids know what it feels like to wanting to belong to a different community, also wanting to belong to their family, also wanting to be their own person. And I think, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of women that can relate to that. Women in the middle.
Women in the middle. When you were growing up, what kind of friends did you have in relation to them relating to you, like you identify as this rebel, right? You're kind of going against the norm of the Hmong girl upbringing. What kind of friends were you attracted to in the realm of connecting and what you engaged with? And were they also Hmong, or were they, you know, tell me more about that friendship dynamic.
You know, so I grew up with, you know, we had a pretty decent Hmong population in La Crosse. And so I listened to one of the other podcasts too, where we talk about how, I don't know about you guys, but we had our school friends and then we had our weekend cousin friends.
Yes.
So a lot of it was like that, where you know, for the 5 days, you have this, I don't know, say like role. You have this role of being the American kid, going to school, speaking English, relating to the general population. And then when you came home, you got to be like your Hmong side or your Hmong identity, where you hanged out with your cousin and you did all these things. And so it was very separate.
Yeah.
It's very separate. And I, so even as an adult, I have my boundaries. And some of my Caucasian friends would be like, you know, we notice that you only hang out with us from Monday to Thursday, and you don't want to do anything with us on the weekend. And I was like, yeah.
Why are you only penciling us in on 4 days a week?
Yeah. And I said, well, guys, it's like 4 days of you guys, you know. I work with you guys. I do all this thing with you guys. I have to be a certain way with you guys. And so, yeah, you guys get Monday through Thursday, and Friday, Saturday, Sunday is where I get to go be me. And so they kind of pointed that out to, even as an adult, yeah. They were wondering why I did that. And I did.
Yeah. You're probably like, you know, a little bit trained, right, over all those years. So it's interesting. You said it's a different version of you, right? Can you help us understand? What do you mean by that? Like, why is it a different version?
You know, I think back then I had different versions that I had to be. And probably very recently, I finally accepted me as a whole person. And when I had to do the different versions, I felt like I couldn't be my total self with everybody. And certain people get certain parts of me.
Mm-hmm.
And even now, I would say maybe to a certain extent, it's still that way.
Yeah.
But it's not everybody is going to understand you. You know, you have your colleagues who have the work. You have your cousins who you knew when you were little. And then you have the group where, as a business person, they understand you being an entrepreneur, your journey. So it's still different groups that you can relate to. And yet there's one group that you feel that you can be your true self with.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's like navigating all those relationships in your life when you are a person in the middle. It just feels like that. It's almost like when I talk about people at work, it's like, yeah, you have these, what is it called when you can't be your true self at work and code switching.
So,
yeah, it's almost like you have to code switch.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. I totally understand that concept. And a lot of people talk about that, right? And we do have a lot of versions of ourselves. And there's many layers to us, you know, as humans. But, you know, I also think that it's, as we get older, as we heal, as we're exposed to different kinds of people, and life goes on, that it feels more comfortable the more we're able to just be all those versions in one.
Yeah.
You know,
we don't fit into just one mold.
Yeah.
Speaking of fitting in, have you ever felt like you've tried to blend in, or you've tried to fit in, or have you ever struggled with that concept at all?
Oh yeah, I totally. I think growing up in the 80s and 90s, where diversity was not as talked about as it is now, And especially growing up in a smaller Midwest city, you're gonna feel very out of place. And I'm thinking about all my, so I went to a private school for college, and I was the only person of color in my social work class. And so there was definitely dynamics there too. I mean, I felt like I could be myself, and yet sometimes the professors would question my writing ability. And then in all my professional jobs, I was the only person of color. And so I was often the token. And then at the same time, trying to fit in. And then people would say, "Oh, you're not like the normal Asian women." And it's like,
What's that?
submissive, not speak up, very quiet, almost like the model minority.
Yep.
And when I spoke up, I advocated for myself, I became assertive. It almost made other people uncomfortable that I became not the norm, that I was not the stereotype. And when I became not the stereotype, it's like, oh, you're kind of difficult.
Oh,
They don't like that word.
they
Confidence.
don't.
Yes.
Yes, confidence.
You had the confidence, which some people don't know what to do with that. Some people are attracted to it. Some people are uncomfortable. And you also were outside of their expectations and stereotypes, which that also jolts people.
Yeah.
Different.
Yeah. Yeah, we talked about that a little bit, Paella. I think one of
We did.
our private conversations, we did talk about the idea of, what does diversity mean, right? To be included, to be represented. But at the end of the day, you don't just want a seat at the table. You want to be valued for your contribution. And you want to belong to that table, right? And be engaged and asked to be engaged, not just to be there, and not to just represent, quote unquote, your people or a minority group or underrepresented people as a whole, right? And I think that's where the challenge and still is within many organizations, corporations, and the workforce, and just our overall social environments, right? Is that idea of like diversity is not just a number, it's not just representation. I don't know how do you feel like that's been going for you as you've been merging into entrepreneurship and new circles? Do you feel like that's opening up for you and you're being able to really be included and invited and engaged in dialogue? Or you still feel like it's a challenge?
I think I have to be more intentional now. When I first started this, I just said yes to everything, and I would participate in some of these groups. I felt so awkward, and I knew that I didn't belong. And already being a therapist, that's already hard enough. And then to be a woman and a woman of color who is a therapist, that's kind of, we're still kind of unheard of. And to be private pay too and not take insurance, that's something else also. And you mentioned something that was so poignant and so profound to me when you said we're often invited, but we don't often get to participate. And then it just like hit me when you said that. I'm like, that is so true. Is that why some of these groups I just felt like I did not belong? And I am going to listen to my intuition now. If that group does not feel right, I'm not going to say, I'm going to keep going. I'm going to keep persevering. If it doesn't feel right to me the first or second time, I'm not going to put my energy into that anymore. I don't have to feel anxious or feel like I have to be someone else that I'm not, or other people can't accept me for being me. And so I'm very intentional now about who I continue to connect with.
Yay.
I love hearing how proud you are with your tone of voice saying that. This has got to be very relatable to a lot of other women in the middle, but I would say this was complete gold for you to share with us. So thank you for sharing what you just said, which I'm going to repeat when I listen to this, but it kind of gives people a lens into you as a woman of color, as an Asian woman, a therapist, so that they can understand you and maybe other women who have potentially walked a similar path. I was going to ask, how many clients do you have that are people of color?
I actually have a lot. Not all of them are Asian. A lot of them, you know, Minnesota is not really known for our diversity in Wisconsin. So I'm licensed in Wisconsin and Minnesota, and Wisconsin is even more minimum for having clinicians of color or BIPOC. And Minnesota, we don't have as much too, and especially in the corporate setting where we talk about how we deal with like DEI and microaggressions in the corporate setting. And I have a lot of people of color who we don't share the same race, ethnicity, or even religion, and yet they chose me because they know that as a person of color, I can relate to their struggles more than a white therapist would.
Yeah.
I ask that because Lisa and I have talked about this, and we have actively pursued, I call it a personal board of directors, like therapists, doctors, all that stuff, mm-hmm. that are women of color. Lisa, I think you said you're a medical provider.
We've talked, I can't remember if we've talked about this on podcast or not, but I'll just share briefly. This past year or past 2 years was the very first time in my entire life that I had gone to a woman and a woman of color provider. Mm-hmm. And it was also the very first time that I actually felt like somebody was listening to me. And I can't really describe it. I can't describe what she said or what she did, but it was the first time I actually really have been seen. And it's hit me in a profound way, and I can't explain it. And so from now going forward, anything that's really personal to my health, my body, my mind, I really do want to lean into women of color who can be a good support.
It makes a huge difference. I mean, my primary is also, she's Asian, she's Chinese. And I asked the local community Facebook page a few years ago, you know, what health providers do you recommend in this neighborhood? And five people tagged this woman's name. And I look her up, and I was so happy that it was, you know, a person of color. And then my OB, my nurse practitioner when I was pregnant, was a woman from India, and I was so excited. Unfortunately, I had to can her because she made a comment that my hormonal body didn't respond well to. But I really thank you for even having that role in your profession, because I guarantee a lot of the clients that you have probably come to you because they can find comfort in the relatability piece with identity.
Yes. Totally. Oh, thank you so much, Pei. I mean, we could go on forever, and I feel like every single podcast, Anahita and I say this, and we just feel so honored that you took time out of your day and that you're sharing these pieces of your life and yourself, because there are so many women out there that need to hear it. And you never know who might be helped today by just hearing a little piece of your story. And we always love to share about our guests. So we certainly will share about the work that you do and whatnot in our show notes and things like that. But first and foremost, we're just honored you as a person, as a woman, that you shared with us today. So Thank you so much, Paya, for being here. Do you have any last thoughts or words for us before we say our goodbyes?
Yeah, thank you for having me. This was, I've done a few podcasts and this was the most fun. So
we are fun.
Yeah, this is the most fun. And it feels like we're just missing some cosmos here. So,
I mean, we could do a Life in Our Skin after dark with
right.
and talk all the other things.
Well, yeah. You're always included in our network.
Thank you. Thank you for having me so much. I enjoyed this.
Oh, thank you so much, dear. Well, that's it for us. And we're so delighted to be sharing all of this with all of you. And we can't wait to have more conversations with incredible women across the country, women in the middle who experience their life in between the white and black community. And we are shouting out to everyone, and we'll talk to you next time.
Copy over.
Bye.